It's time to relax with the Offspring.
We're very, very happy to have as our guest today, Bob. Bob Rock. Yep. Thank you for joining us very much. Yeah. It's funny being like, we're like the, you're the guests and we're like the interviewers, but normally we don't work like that. We just have fun in the studio and work on songs together. So this is really cool. So thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. It's good to have you on here.
In the hood.
In the hood, I know. Extra points for the Offspring hat. I love that too. Yeah, he's representing. Well, it's so great to have you here, and we want to give you a chance to talk about, well, whatever you want, I guess, but you know, your history would be interesting. I think one of the things I think about when I think about Bob Rock is that he, of course, gets attached to Metallica quite a bit, right?
Right.
In a way, justly so, right? They made the biggest metal record of all time and blah, 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 and it's really big, and it's, you know, it's
classic. They're one of the biggest bands and currently and have been for a decade.
Yeah. So nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But I think what that overshadows in Bob's case sometimes is that that was not the world that you came up in. It wasn't like you came up being a rock or metal producer or whatever. You really
not
came
at
up
all
in the Vancouver punk scene.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. But the great thing about what happened with the beginning of punk, when I first started working at Little Mountain, when punk happened, all of a sudden, you know, it was cool that guys that weren't virtuoso musicians could make records. And I worked in a studio. So studio manager said at night, you guys can work with these local bands that are up and coming. So Ron Obvious, who got a job the same time I did, we just split all, you know, you do this band, I do this band. So every night we recorded all the punk, the whole punk scene.
But this was explain what you did during the day.
Oh, yeah, I did jingles, you know, commercials and stuff.
You said Little Mountain, that's the name of the studio. Right, okay.
Yeah, when we were younger and we were just figuring out, you know, how to be engineers and stuff.
So guys would come in and they would say, okay, we're doing a jingle for whatever.
Yeah, like Hudson's Bay or all sorts of things. Right. And actually, the thing, I was talking to another engineer, famous engineer, Bob Clearmountain, and he did the same thing. A lot of guys my age, we did that. It was kind of like you were making a one-minute record every day. So we record drums, we'd overdub, we'd sing and mix it, a 30-second or a one-minute song, right?
Right.
So it was good experience.
Wow.
So that would be your 9 to 5 pretty much.
Yep.
And then as soon as that was done, you'd have whatever local band come in, whatever it was that day, and record all night.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Not much sleep.
Yeah.
But it was great. That's how you learn how to do it.
So they allowed you to sort of moonlight.
Yeah.
And does that mean you charge the bands when they're coming in?
Yeah, but it was nothing.
It was cheap, right?
Yeah, it was really cheap.
So it was affordable for them and all that, right? And do you found, like, did the bands appreciate it, that they had a place to go?
Yeah. And like I said, it was like I was learning, they were learning.
Yeah.
Yeah, that experience.
You talked about Pointed Sticks, I think. Is that one of the bands that you worked with at the time?
Pointed Sticks.
Yeah, so there was a lot of...
Going to Hawaii, the Hawaii song.
Yeah, let's go to fucking Hawaii. I can say that. This is on a podcast, right?
Yes, you can.
The Young Canadians.
Young Canadians, a great band. Yeah, very good band.
It's like, it goes like deep, like stuff that you don't even know, right?
And
bands and stuff.
DOA.
Of course, DOA. Everyone knows.
And Subhumans. And,
Right.
Yeah, in the conversation I had this morning, as I told you, you know, even, it's funny, the Buhay Gardens in San Francisco, Metallica used to play with all the punk bands.
Right.
So there's that, and they were big fans of punk because they were off on their own, right? I figured there's something about the speed, the thrash thing. There's a connection between punk and them, right?
Yeah. Well, there was a crossover for sure.
Totally.
Right?
Well, the whole DRI and all that kind of crossover. Yeah, Metallica definitely crossover on that too. Yeah.
Speed metal was kind of a thing back
Venom
then.
But
Metallica was they were different than that kind of, right?
Yeah,
100%.
But yeah, for sure, that's really cool. Now you've talked about going to parties where some of the punk bands didn't always like you guys for whatever it was, right? Like, weren't punk enough.
Well, we weren't punk enough, but,
are you talking about the Paolas?
I was jumping forward a little bit, I guess. But let's talk about that. We'll move into that, I guess, if you want.
Well, what happened is we wrote a song, and I worked at this studio, so we wrote this song. We got Art from the Canadians to play organ. It's called China Boys and blah, blah, blah. And we put it out and we made 1,000 records. They sold out right away. And we got signed on one song.
That's How great. Dare you?
I know.
How
no,
dare you sell out?
Immediately we were hated because everybody else is trying to get signed. Right. We put out one song. And the record company, they said, of course, you got lots of songs. And we're going, yeah, oh, we got Yeah, we got hundreds, right? We had none. That was the only song we wrote. So anyway.
And this band is the Paolas.
This is, the Paolas, yeah.
You and Paul were kind of the main.
Yeah, the main guys. So
You never said that it was your mom who bought all 1,000 records.
Like, no.
Like, hey, they all sold out. Hey, thanks, Grandma.
But, you know, the thing about Vancouver and that scene, it was the university radio station. Because nobody would play in commercials, they wouldn't play any good music on on the regular radio
station.
We had
that here as well, a couple of radio stations.
Yeah.
Like KXLU, mainly.
Yeah. And so it was really, everybody was in a band. So there was a scene. And I think we got, everybody just talked about the bands from here, New York, you know, Chicago and London.
Right.
And Vancouver was kind of off in the corner. So, like, great writers there, like Art Bergman and the Modernettes, Buck Cherry. He got money for the band, Buck Cherry. They wanted to use that, and they had to pay him. It was great.
He was Buck Cherry first.
Wow. Yeah.
That's true. You don't really hear, you kind of have to really be in the know to know about the history of the Vancouver punk scene, right?
I mean,
you go DOA and...
Yeah. SNFU.
SNFU was
Dago
more
Abs,
like, yeah,
there
was
the Subhumans.
There
was the Canadian Subhumans.
Right. But,
Subhumans UK, Subhumans Canada.
The Canadian Subhumans, like I think in the Barbados Iggy Pop documentary about punks, I think one guy was saying that really it's not like we wanted to bring down the government, we just wanted to make records. And punk was, like I said, with Paul and I, all of a sudden we could write simple songs, play fast, and, you know, we didn't have to be virtuoso musicians.
Right.
But
Did anyone in particular inspire that? Gave you that realization that you didn't have to be a great musician?
Well, let's put it this way. When the Nevermind the Bollocks came out, it's like I could play that like immediately.
Right.
You know, it's simple, fast, loud.
Yeah.
You know, and it just appealed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably Ramones for us, but I mean, Sex Pistols, of course, was one of
for
the
sure.
big ones.
Point of Sticks were big Ramones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? I mean, a lot of the punk bands were simple, right?
Even TSOL and, you know, Ron's playing, I think, is great, and there was a lot of stuff back in the day that I didn't understand how we did some of that stuff. But it's not Jimi Hendrix. Certainly wasn't Eddie Van Halen.
Right.
You know, if you could pick up a guitar, put three chords together, and make it sound different and unique, then you could do it. You didn't have to be shredding, you know.
Right. So yeah, I understand what you're saying, because we felt the same way. We can connect on that level that those bands.
Yeah.
I remember seeing during COVID, I watched Straight Outta Compton, and I just the same thing happened. They were trading cassettes. They were putting out independent tracks, just like the punk scene. So I kind of related to that, you know. And then everybody in Vancouver got better, you know, by just doing it first and blah blah blah. We got better. Our songwriting got better, you know.
Yeah.
So got a new drum. Yeah. Sticking with it and doing
sticking,
it over and over
sticking
again,
with
you're
it.
Bound to get better, unless you're really awful.
Oh, there's
you don't
plenty
always
of that.
Get better. Well, you know, we had a cassette demo that we wanted to. Sometimes we tried to sell it, but sometimes you're talking about cassettes. Like, you go to Radio Shack, you could buy a pack of 10 for like maybe $10 or something like that, and we would just dub them off,
right?
And just give them out at the parties, right? Yeah. We get rid of 25 or 50 of them at a time. Maybe you got one. I don't know.
No, I don't. I think Daryl has one.
Daryl does. Yeah.
But yeah, cassettes. Yeah. That's how you did it, right? You got to just get it out there. However, whatever
I think
it takes.
Our friend Rick ended up with most of them.
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, so you're in the Paolas for a while, and do you want to talk about how that happened, how it?
What's the guy that the A&R guy? He signed REM and us the same week.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
They did better than us, but you know, we got signed, and you know, we toured America, and you know.
How long till Eyes of a Stranger came out?
It was after our first album. So I guess it was 81 when that album came out, A Stranger to Danger.
Okay.
And we got Mick Ronson to produce our record, our second record. I produced the first one.
And Mick Ronson was big for you, right?
Yeah, it was really big. A big Bowie fan, and him in particular. We asked him actually to do our first album, but he didn't get the cassette until we'd already done that album and stuff like that.
So someone had a line to him? You were able to actually reach him?
Yeah. It took a while, though.
Yeah.
We just learned to be better. And touring the States and across Canada, you start to figure out, like, what's good about you, and you just get better.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great. And that had a lot to do with the other career that I've had. And you know, even talking this morning with another interview, it's like a big part of my overall career, working in that and coming from that thing. Like we talked about Metallica, I'm not a big metal fan. It comes down to, you know, early rock like Led Zeppelin and those early things when I was a kid. But then the punk scene, that part of it is different. So when I work with Metallica, I didn't change them, okay? I just helped them make the record they wanted to make. Mm-hmm. And that comes from the experience of even Jingles, you know, the stuff I'd done.
Right, right.
You know, like I recorded TV shows, strings and stuff. The same with Buble. He thought, why am I getting the guy that does Metallica? So there's all this stuff. Anyway, all that adds up, all those experiences and being around like great writers, even local ones, not famous, didn't become famous, like Art Bergman, Buck Cherry, great songwriters.
Right. So a lot of producers, they've come up in the engineering world, but not a lot of them have actually really been in bands or in successful bands, right? So, I mean, that you must know that that gives you a unique perspective, right? And probably, helps you in the studio, right?
The whole thing with me was, it was always about records and songs, and it was always about the sounds. Like, I was always drawn into, like, I remember All Right Now, you know, it starts with a guitar. It's like, why? That's so freaking cool, you know? Right. And then I heard Good Vibrations, the Beach Boys. I go, I don't know what the fuck's going on, but I want to know how to do that, right?
Uh-huh.
So there's that. And I thought, there was no plan. It was all, I got a job at the studio. That's where, that's called day one of real stuff, right? And then everything just happened. And you kind of, when you work with other people, you take this. I like what they're doing. I'll put that in my folder, you know? And it was like many years. I mean, before Metallica, there was like 20 years of me getting the tool set, right?
Right.
And sure. So I think besides being writing songs and knowing great lyricists, et cetera, all that stuff adds up to, and being Sonics, the experience with Sonics, I had a toolbox for Metallica, right? And when I met them, they used the same guy for their whole career. And so when they never recorded in the studio together, okay? And I'm going like, what's up with that?
What do you mean they didn't record together?
Well, basically, James did all the guitars to a click track. Lars would overdub the drums. Then they'd do the bass. And then they'd do the vocals. And Kirk would come in for 4 days and do all the solos. So in other words, there was no connection between people.
Uh-huh.
It was like,
during the creating of the songs.
Yeah, they're creating songs. Anyway, so when I came along, I'd never done that because it made no sense. And there's all these things that there's reasons why you record a band live in the studio. One, as you know, you can change things, right?
Right.
On the fly.
Right.
Tempo's important. There's all these things that are important. So when you hear the whole thing together, you kind of know what you're going to end up being. Anyway, so I brought that, and they fucking hated it.
You wanted to play together. Yeah. I mean, I guess normally at least you would start with the drums, right? The drums, you consider that kind of the foundation of the song and stuff. So you made them play together.
Yeah, and like, you know, because we make records together, you know, you change things all along. Uh-huh. Right? You know, because, you know, you put a part in or things change. When you've done this thing and you've worked 3 months and you want to replace the B section back then, you just can't do it.
Right.
So it's limiting. Anyway.
Well, when you're on Epitaph, you can't do it either. and I'm not bagging on Epitaph. I'm just saying, like, we had 10 days to make
we were limited.
Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we didn't even demo. Just write the song, go in, and
we didn't have the resources. We didn't have the studio at the time. And now, now you can do all this stuff. A kid can do it on his living room on a computer, you know, with a drum machine. Well, the drum machine is the computer, you know, just to get an idea, then go record. Right. Yeah.
But, like, there's a part in We Are One on Ignition, and kind of goes on too long.
Oh, right.
But
we
didn't know until we got in there. And then once you record it, you can't do anything about it. It was your best guess going in a studio.
Do you remember Take It Like a Man? Tom Wilson, our producer, cut out half the tape. Like, literally cut out a piece of the tape.
Did he?
We're getting rid of this solo section. And we're trimming this down a little
bit. And it's almost like you're learning and you're going, is this how we make records? I guess it is. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, nowadays you just, you know, cut and splice on the computer, but it was much harder when cutting the tape, because if you've screwed it up and got it wrong, we got to start over.
Yeah. As I'm sure Bob knows very well, right? Yeah. You did a lot of tape work.
Yeah, I did.
Well, so you're starting at Little Mountain. You have your band on the side. Your band kind of runs this course. You start engineering bigger and bigger records, right? So there's a producer. The producer's kind of like the head honcho, and then the engineer kind of does a lot of the whatever manual work, I guess. And that's where you started going.
Who were some of the producers you worked under?
Well, the main guy that gave me a shot was Bruce Fairbairn.
Okay.
And
puts his pants on one leg at a time. But once he gets his pants on.
Right.
The thing was what was interesting is, because of the work that I did with all the local punk bands, he wanted to change. There was a certain studio kind of thing going on. I wouldn't say it's conservative, but, you know, he just noticed people were saying, well, this guy, he's kind of more interesting or more raw, a little louder, blah, blah, blah. So he gave me a shot and it just connected.
Wow. And what were some of the bigger records that you did
with him
that time? Yeah.
Well, I guess how we got noticed, really the biggest one, we did this Canadian band called Honeymoon Suite, and the guys in Bon Jovi heard that, and we did them, and then it was Aerosmith and blah, 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 like lots of bands. But in between that, I was started producing, so... When the Pale has stopped, I concentrated on being a producer. At first, I was doing engineering, mixing, and everything, and I couldn't do that. It was too much. So I hired Randy Staub as an engineer, and then I could concentrate on being a producer. You just learn about these things.
Uh-huh. Right? Yeah. And what was your first producing job?
It was a band called Kingdom Come. That kind of sounded like Led Zeppelin, right?
Well, maybe a little. I don't know. But that's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just, I ultimate admiration and respect, but that he did the Bon Jovi record, right? It just cracks me up to think of Bob in there like, one more time on Living on a Prayer, you know, go. Yeah. You know, it's just.
God damn it, John. I said like this. I'm doing it again.
Well, that was Bruce. So I was the engineer mixer. So we did that whole record in 5 weeks.
5 weeks. And you did it in Vancouver, so
In Vancouver, yeah, they came to Vancouver. Destroyed Vancouver. They tore the city apart.
Really?
Yeah. Met every stripper in Vancouver. I mean, it was a lot of fun. Just watching it, I'd never seen people like that. It was amazing.
Wow.
From New Jersey.
And then you met Motley Crue.
And then,
You're like, how could this get any worse?
Wow, that is awesome.
Well, and you've kept, I know you still work with Richie to this day. You've kept a really good, long relationship with him.
Yeah. So that's great. Always good people. You know, even like when we talk about music, I mean, that's where my heart, you know, punk and different kinds of music and stuff, but that's not really the point to what I do. You know, I find that all that stuff is important. Like all those references always come to, there's fruition that grows out of all those influences, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just become better at it.
We as humans, we have a tendency to want to put everything into a certain category. You know, it's like you became the metal producer when you did Metallica. We're a punk band, right? Because we came from the punk scene. But really, we all just like good music and good songs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've produced Motley Crue, You produced Us. You produced Michael Bublé.
Yeah. Right?
You know, so you've done a lot of different things. It's all good music. It's just very different. And, you know, I think as we get older, we also stop compartmentalizing everything and really start to learn to appreciate, you know, other things
right.
more. Yeah. Unless,
yeah, how do you go? How do you go from Metallica to Michael Bublé? How does that work as a producer?
It's the basics, and the basics is, like for instance, how I got involved. We have the same manager, Bruce Allen. Your manager at this right. point, and the producer he was working with, he brought a song, and the producer said, "The song's shit," and Bruce says, "Went well, talk to Bob," and Michael's going. The producer, the Metallica, and he just explained, no, there's history beyond that. So he came to Maui, and I just listened to his song, and there was really obviously, you're missing this, you double this, which is that all years of being in studios and watching other guys, you know, what they do, there's patterns and stuff. What's missing? And I got him to rewrite the bridge, and I got real guys, Josh Fries played drums on it. And we cut the drums, and Michael just went, oh my God. And it was, and anyway, it was so different. And then we started the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's another guy. You bring up Josh. I mean, Josh plays in the Vandals. He plays with us. He's played with Sting. He's played on Bublé stuff.
I mean,
you know, that guy can
it's
play.
It's the same thing.
He loves music, and he just loves playing all different kinds of music, you know.
Right.
Yeah, Josh drums for all my favorite bands, and like, a lot of the bands I hate too. Like, he's just drunk for everybody. Like, you know, he's
right. Yeah, drunk for anybody, right? Yeah. Yeah.
And it comes down to the love of making records.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
There you go.
So, do you feel like you can, you said he brought in a song, you can listen to it and just, this is what you do as a producer, like, that part doesn't work, that part needs to be longer, that, and that's how you evaluate a song or see it? You can
I don't
just,
really, it ends up becoming kind of more of a feeling. It's there's so many repetitive things, like even bands, you know, like everybody knows, like a bass player has got this certain personality, a drummer's got this, you know, you can always tell who's like, who's the alpha male in the band, you're gonna who's dragging his feet. There's always in a band, there's always one guy that's not as good as ever, but he's a friend or what, you know. It's all these patterns that you
shit
you
he's
see.
Talking about me, isn't he?
No. Oh no, don't be silly. Anyway. So it's the same with songs. You just see, like, so many bands, they have great verses, great feels and stuff, but it never goes anywhere. It's just words on top of music, right? So there's a thing that has, you know, you learn that there has to be a lift. Actually, you know, the greatest example is you talking to you.
I was going to say.
You know, it's like,
I, watch you guys go
I think
this.
I'm going to quote you on this, but you basically, when we talked about what you did, is you love punk music. But there wasn't a lot of people that had great choruses, and you wrote great choruses, and that's the offspring. It's the same thing. Like, you found what I found. It's like lots of great songs, and we love all those songs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We did talk about that. We love the energy of punk music and the spirit right. and the vibe. The whole thing was great, but there weren't really a lot of great songs.
Right.
Yeah,
songs. I don't know.
Yeah,
can you name along. A couple just off the top of your head? What would be a great?
Well,
punk
Ramones
song?
had a lot
for sure.
They had early on. You know, yeah. I think there were some great X songs, but I don't know that they had like even so much choruses. You could sing along to them. All
right,
good.
Not really, right?
Yeah, not really choruses.
TSOL, not particularly melodic, really.
Yeah.
Come on, Dead Kennedys were catchy as hell.
Well,
Dead
this Kennedys is, but Holiday in Cambodia, I'm sorry, but it's got a chorus.
See?
Yeah.
Right?
No chorus, right?
Yeah. All the other songs are, but that.
Adolescence Had Amoeba, that's a real song.
Yeah.
Dagle Abortions, blah, 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 Arg Fuck Hill, right?
That's a good chorus. That's a catchy chorus, yeah.
So great music, not always great song. I don't know, Institutionalize, that doesn't really have a, I guess it kind of has a chorus, but
yeah.
It's a great song, one of my favorite songs ever, right?
But right.
So that's kind of what we used to sit around and hash out and stuff, is like, how can I take the energy, punk rock, and the vibe and all that and make good songs?
You also, I remember early on, I think it was like Take It Like a Man, around that era, around Ignition era. You really wanted these songs to groove, too. You know, I think Take It Like a Man has a super strong groove to it.
Yeah.
You know. So that was important.
Yeah, you know, yeah. That probably goes back to AC/DC, right? Because AC/DC, even though they're a rock band,
right.
They really have a groove to it, right? I mean, I'm sure you would agree. That.
Absolutely. Yeah. All those things, and going back to Metallica and what a producer does, like what I learned from Bruce and the records that I made is where a song sits tempo-wise. There's a magic number where the riff sounds the best. You know, one beat too fast or one beat too slow, it's not the same, right? And so I got into that. And once again, when you're all in the same room, when I did pre-production, we could adjust that, right? And keys. And I've told this story many times. One of the things that when I was working with them, I'd write down the speed and then the key. And after six songs, it was E, 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 E. And I'm going like, why is everything in E? And James said, it's the lowest note. And everybody, yeah, that's really funny. But I said, but all the bands that you're influenced, like Black Sabbath and even Van Halen, Motley, they're all tuned down to D. And the next song was Sad But True. So they tried it and they went, oh, fuck. That's why Sad But True is so heavy, right?
Yeah. See?
Wow. There you go.
Good thing Bob was there.
I imagine how it would turn out. I know.
It would have been an E.
So how did California Cruising get on the record? Can we, like, you produced that. You didn't have any idea, like, hey, let's speed this up or nothing. What happened there?
Well, it's Cruising California, for one. You got the title backwards.
Right. Oh, that was it then. Maybe that was it.
That's what took it into it. Yeah.
Black Ball's teasing us for putting that song on the record. It was a little on the poppy side, but, you know.
A little. Yeah,
but you see, I think what every artist goes through, every single artist, you make records, and you've got, it's this, Bowie said it perfectly. He said, what your record, you want to make the same but different. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just want to be able to move in small jumps. And sometimes you make a big jump. And you make mistakes because what you're doing is you want to try and make records. Yeah. And you can't help but be in, like, culture has an influence on what you do.
Well, it's interesting with Bowie because he was always kind of reimagining himself.
Reinventing,
But it always did sound like him. I think probably because his voice was so unique.
Maybe,
you know? But it did always sound like Bowie. You knew it was Bowie, even though it's not, you know, whether it's Space Oddity or Low, or Black Star, what he did towards the end. It was him, unmistakably.
He made bigger jumps, right? Wouldn't you say? Like him, the Beatles, of course.
Yeah, but they were inventing kind of cultures, right?
Yeah.
Like the Beatles had the perfect, you know, all the technology, multi-tracks, and they lived in that point where change was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're in a band, you know, you've heard this a million times where if someone goes, oh, it just sounds like all their other stuff if you make the same record, and then if you make something different, like, I don't like it because it doesn't sound like their old stuff.
Listen, no, I'm all for, you know, that was just like, listen, I know everything can't be home runs, you know, but, you know, I do see there's actually a lot of people that actually like that song, to my surprise, but everything could be a home run. I mean, nobody hits home runs every time they get up to bat.
Well, and we tend to prefer more aggressive songs, you know, but every once in a while you want to do something that, you know, just
throw
also
a curveball.
I was going out when that record came out, I was saying, I think it was either Fat Mike or Fletcher that dared Dexter to write a real pop song, and so that's what he came up with.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah, you know.
Okay, It was a dare. There you go.
Yeah.
See, well, good for not backing down there.
I spun that. Yeah. See that?
I respect that now.
That's pretty good. Well, I mean, look, yeah, we came from the punk scene, and that's what we're about, and that's kind of what... who we are,
but
I guess.
But at the same time, we don't want to be limited by what...
Exactly.
We don't want to be compartmentalized, you know, in any way, shape, or form.
That's what I was going to say. You can go all the way back to Ignition, and we did a song called Dirty Magic, which was way different than the rest of the record. And so there's always been that part of
us. I remember some of our punkers, really you're gonna put that song on the record? Fuck yeah, it's a great song.
I think every artist that exists, that there's always one song like, shouldn't have done.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Led Zeppelin.
I've heard, I think, Stones, you know, talk about some of their stuff, too. I love I'm a huge Stones fan, so.
And the stuff that's the most well-known by us is the stuff that is not necessarily the punkest.
No, for sure.
Oh, yeah. All right, yeah. So. Yeah.
You know. All right. Listen, that's cool. Maybe I sang corrected.
You're on the first song that we ever got crap for not being prog. You're the hook, buddy.
I get it.
You should see that song in Japan, dude. Come on.
Have you guys played it live?
You know what?
They liked it. Yeah.
You played it live? Okay.
They did.
Okay. Yeah.
I believe you.
Also, I get a lot of fans from all over Asia, Indonesia, Malaysia, saying that, you know, they want us to come and play that song there. So.
All right. I think they'd be happy for you to play anything out there. Yeah. I think, you know, they just want you there.
Our friend Pierre Robert legitimately liked that song. He's one of the few American DJs I know that liked that song. He's Pierre Robert.
I just remember when it came out. I had a look. I said, no, what the fuck? Like,
wait a minute. Yeah. We're spending way too much time on that one song.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, Blackbell, we're making a new record right now, actually. We're working today. Oh, yeah. We've been working all week.
All right, cool.
I have a tough time with microphones.
Well, I'm ready. I speaking of hooks, I'm ready for my next hook.
You ready?
Oh, I asked Dexter if I could do your part on this record.
God damn it. I knew it. I've been
he
replaced.
Did actually yesterday.
Keep me in mind for the hooky parts. No. I'm tired of handing them all to Blackball. I love him. I love him dearly.
Okay,
but,
I get it.
Yeah, so we're getting close-ish, right, Bob? Mm-hmm. Finished kind of? You know, we got...
I think you said... We got it surrounded.
Yeah. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
The wagons.
Well put.
So that's like weeks to months. Let's put it in that time frame, right? To being completed, wouldn't you say?
I don't comment on time anymore. Like, nobody believes me when I say
it. It's just, nobody does. You know, you guys are sounding like Guns N' Roses at this point. Like, that's coming.
No, that was
it's
the
coming.
Last record. Nine years to do the last record.
Yeah.
But getting to one thing about making this out. Making the same record over and over. AC/DC is a great example. They stick to their thing. But there was a time where they lost the plot by doing that, which is Fly on the Wall or something. You know, they're huge, and then there was like four that was, it's exactly the same. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, well, look at Bad Religion, right? Where they released that Into the Known or... whatever it was, that was
Into the Unknown, right? They made a big departure, and then it didn't go over well, so they went back to the style that everyone knows and likes. Yeah. And like, there's a lot of bands that sound really the same record to record, and some people like that. And I don't know.
No. I just give you shit. It's actually not a bad song. If it was an Offspring, I would have been like, oh. But it was, just a big departure. I just.
Well, AC/DC is a good example because they do sound very similar. They did evolve and change a little bit, right? Very groove-oriented kind of early on. Yeah. Of course, new singer changes everything. But you talked about Back in Black and how it was completely different from the stuff that had come before because it was slower, for one. It was one of the things you mentioned about it. And it just the grooves were different.
Yeah, and actually, that's also Metallica. You know, when I met with them, they played cassettes, right? Mm-hmm. And all the tempos are like... All the demos are like the album, right? And I said, so what changed? And they said, well, I'm quoting them. But they said they played with Aerosmith. And they just noticed there were no girls in the audience. And they said that the tempos were down. And they got tired of it. It was almost, they were saying after Justice, they toured, it was like playing algebra. And they they consciously made a shift. We've got to change. You know, we can't just keep doing this. Right. And, I ruined Metallica with the Black Album.
I wouldn't say that.
Everybody says that I changed them. But I can honestly say we just made the record that they wanted to make.
It
wasn't my choice, right?
You know, a fucking great record still to this day.
It wasn't like you could come in and say, look, Metallica, you're going to do it my way, right?
Yeah.
Like that would have never worked, right?
It works with us, but not other bands.
So how's the new record sounding? These guys, they're doing pretty good or what? What grade would you give them? Grade, yeah.
It's not done. Okay. And I'm a great believer. I think it's the one thing that maybe has changed with us through the years is we won't, if you want to call that a mistake, there's no mistakes now.
Okay.
You know, because we take the time, perspective is everything. And one thing that we've done, I think, is we, we work in chunks. So we go away for like 3 weeks or a month, and we come back, and we can, you know, it's almost like Dexter's thinking the same thing, and Noodles comes in with his perspective. And between the, in other words, if the three of us are happy, it's good.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, and the other guys too. I mean,
yeah.
The other guys are in the studio quite a bit and loving what we're doing. We had Brandon in yesterday playing some drums on stuff.
Nice.
And just bringing really some new energy and excitement to the project too, for sure. He's really stoked to be a part of this, and he likes the song, so it's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're pumped. It's going to be really cool.
And we got, there's a left field song on this one. It's super heavy. You'll know what I'm talking about. Super heavy and just really, you know, machine gun attack guitars on it. And I think it's going to blow some minds. But nice. It's not poppy at all.
No.
You know, I think that one's, people are going to go, whoa.
You want a high five right now?
You're doing all the rhythm guitar on that.
Our last record, it took a long time to get the last record out, but we're stoked. Things are going great. Want to keep on going. It's been what, maybe 2 years right now. It's gonna be about three-ish, which is fast for us.
Out, yeah,
yeah. But
so you're thinking at the end of this year or beginning next year? What do you think?
Yeah.
Cool.
I think so. We're going to go everywhere, the world and elsewhere. We're going to hit all kinds of places, I guess, right?
Universal domination.
Yeah. We're playing Costa Rica for the first time in a month.
Yeah, soon.
First time playing there.
That's
so
awesome.
There's always something, always something new, you know?
Yeah.
It's very cool. But anyway, enough of that. Let's talk about hockey.
Oh,
fuck.
Sure. Let's.
The hockey guys right here. Bob, being Canadian, of course, it's mandatory that he likes hockey. But it's in his blood, I think, right? Yes. The Canucks are your team?
Canucks are my team.
Always been?
Since I moved to Vancouver, yeah.
Okay, because you grew up in Winnipeg, right?
I grew up in Winnipeg. You know, when I was a kid, I liked Gordie Howe and the Red Wings, and then it was Bobby Orr in Boston. Yeah. And then when I moved to Vancouver, I became a Canucks fan, yeah.
Nice.
Diehard Canucks fan.
Yeah, and I'm a crackhead. I'm a big Kraken fan, obviously. but yeah, I just love the sport, you know. My son was at the Vancouver game last night in Vancouver.
Didn't your kids play?
Yeah, my kids played. In fact, my oldest played with one of the kids that's on the Kraken right now, Kyler Yamamoto. Oh, they were teammates together.
Wow.
So, I've just grown up loving hockey, you know. And I remember I was in high school, and I'd never even paid any attention to hockey. And I, growing up in LA, and my brother got tickets from his work. He's like, hey, go to the game with me. And I'm like, I don't know anything about hockey. And he's like, I'll buy you a couple of beers. And I'm like, okay, 16-year-old me, right? And so we go, and this was back before, you know, that it wore helmets and everything. And we're like four rows above the penalty box, and it was a Kings versus Blackhawks. I remember them just yelling at each other in the penalty box, fuck you, fuck you. And they got out on the ice, and they just beat the shit out of each other. And this is back when they pulled the jerseys over the heads and everything. And I was like, I have no idea what's going on, but I fucking love this.
Exactly.
And so I just at that point, that's when I started watching hockey. And I was working at McDonald's in high school, and I bought season tickets, me and my buddy I was working with, and then we bought season tickets to the Kings. And so I had season tickets when I was a senior in high school, and I grew up a Kings fan, and then I could watch any two teams play. And then when Seattle got a team, I embraced them. I got season tickets, and I'm all in, you know. So
part of our management team is Sandy Bathgate, whose dad was Andy.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, wow.
Hall of Famer. He's responsible for what, the helmet or the face mask? What is he responsible for?
What's the story?
Well,
there?
What happened? I think I got it right. Basically, he actually hit a goalie. A slap shot, and it hit him in his face, and it felt bad. And that was the moment when the whole league said, this got to end. And I forget who I should know this, but one guy made a mask, you know, almost like one of those masks in
Jason,
the
horror.
Like Jason, right?
Old school,
old school. And that started. So it's one of those things, like he was feeling bad about what happened, but that was the hockey game, which is why people got fucked up and no teeth and all that stuff. So that changed the game.
Yeah, wow. Totally.
But he had a great career. He's a Hall of Famer.
Our friend Danielle Chip is a goalie and plays hockey and like a local amateur team. And she's got a couple of badass masks. I think Hero helped her design one.
Oh, yeah?
One.
Rad.
So let's talk about this. Rad. You're a hockey fan going way back. You end up knowing us. You do the keep them separated line, right?
Yeah.
Go out and play. And I remember like right when that song came out, people were going, dude, that song would be great at a hockey game every time there's a fight, right? Got to keep them separated. Yeah. Yep. And so I remember the first time someone said, dude, I saw it at a game. The fight broke out and they played your line. So dude, how stoked are you?
I was, I've been so stoked on it. Like, and every time it happens, I just get fucking ecstatic about it. And I remember, even when my kids were younger, like we're at a Kings game, you know, we're down here on vacation, went to the Kings game and they play it after five. I'm like, fuck it, look at your fucking dad's cool, man. I mean, you know, but yeah, no, and so they do it a lot at the Kraken games, and I hear it on TV and, you know, at different games. And yeah, they do it. A lot of teams use it to this day, and I absolutely love it. It's something I never get tired of. And yeah, and your songs that you produce, I mean, you're just the arena rock guy, because every song you produce, it seems like
I remember being at the Ducks game and going, oh, here's another
one.
Here's
another
one, Bob.
Another one.
So.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of great arena themes, you know, but yeah.
I know. Imagine if the song got played at, like, I don't know, underwater ballet or something. Like it wouldn't be nearly as cool. You know, lucky for you, it ended up being hockey.
It all worked out great, so thank you. You know,
but, kind of song. So, how the Canucks? How are they looking this year?
We got to work on that, though. I think we should work on that song.
What?
The underwater ballet song. We should work on something.
Maybe, you going to write something for me? Or what?
Maybe Mike Myers could help us on that.
Yeah. The Canucks are doing really well. And it's really good. We were talking earlier about it. It's kind of like one of those things that magically, it's a great players. We got some superstars, but really the bottom line, they're just playing really good hockey as a team and a great coach, and it has the right thing. So they're doing very, very well.
This is one of the first years I think you might see like a Canadian team. You got like with the Jets are on fire. Edmonton, Toronto, and Vancouver.
We saw a Ducks Edmonton game. It was great.
Well, we got the Ducks offspring day coming up.
That's right. They hit us up because we're Orange County guys.
That makes sense.
And they said, hey, we should, you know, do cool stuff together. So we said, okay.
So that's one of
the cool
things.
You're from Orange County. We're from Orange County.
Yeah, how about that?
Hey,
let's get together.
That's
So we're just going to kind of, I don't know, we're
going to
hang out.
So we've
out.
Been going to some games. It's been a lot of fun. Bob kind of was the one who really started dragging us into the hockey thing. We didn't listen to you when you when you said
it was
good.
Well, we've gone to I came down, we saw the Kraken versus the Ducks.
What was the game? Was it Edmonton or might have been the Canucks where we were in the booth, right? And I was at the front and I went, and I went,
be careful. Oh man.
I think that was the Edmonton.
And what about your guys? How are they looking this year?
Fucking always good, dude.
Always.
Okay. No, listen, man, Kraken are they're a solid team. But you know, I mean, I don't want to get too fucking, you know, but we got four lines of second liners. I mean, everybody can score. It's a real same as Vancouver, real team game, right? And it's kind of one of those things when you get all the right people together, and they're playing really well, very cohesive unit, and everybody, it kind of brings everybody up. So kind of, again, it's kind of same like a band. You get everybody in a band. No individual efforts. Everybody's playing. Everybody's kind of, it just shows.
When you're harmonizing and you're in sync and locked in,
it's fun, man. So the Kraken are looking good. I mean, listen, it's the third season, right? So no one's looking at the Kraken to win a Stanley Cup in 3 years or anything, but it's just fun. I mean, I figured I'd give them 5 years before I even worried about so anything. You know?
You jumped right on with them then.
As soon as they released the logo, I got it tattooed here 2 days after I got it tattooed on my wrist right here. So, I was all in right from the get go. As soon as we got a team, you know. Yeah. So yeah, I have half season tickets, so I go to and then I go to a lot of the other games too. So yeah, I love it.
Nice. Hey, how's Mariah Carey doing?
Allegedly her and her boyfriend have broken up. So,
right.
She seems you got to a be shot. On the market. Right. There is a shot. There is a shot. So yeah, I've been brushing my teeth just in case, you know, like, my hygiene's gotten a little better, you
Mariah,
know.
If you're interested, have your people call our people. We'll hook
What's
you up.
What's that line
with
from
Jason.
Dumb and Dumber? So you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance. Yeah. I definitely perked up when I heard that, you know. So yeah, a lot of people sent me that TMZ article. So yeah. I got a lot of people helping me out here.
So everybody knows.
So you've met Mariah Carey?
Yes.
So how fucking awesome is she?
She is awesome.
I knew it.
Yeah. Like from 1 to 10 scale of awesome, 10 being really awesome, 1 being not too awesome.
No, 1 being just as awesome, but no, because there's no way that she's not awesome. So every number in between is awesome.
It's all awesome. Yeah. Yeah. There's no 0 and there's no 11.
Nothing.
It's all just...
So
she looks great and she can sing.
Yeah.
There you go.
She's flawless, right? Flawless? As a producer, she's flawless, right?
Right. I see no flaws.
Yeah, that's right.
See no flaws.
No flaws detected.
You worked on a TV special that Michael Bublé did some of and Mariah Carey.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Was it like a Christmas thing?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, powerhouse.
Yeah,
right there, man.
Yeah, totally.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
How come we weren't on there? How come you didn't get us on this?
Next time.
Well, you have the same management now, so
do a duet,
right?
Duet with That's Mariah.
Right. Yeah.
You got to keep releasing those Christmas songs, man. Yeah.
I'll do a duet with Bublé. I like Bublé. He's a nice guy.
I'm holding out for Mariah.
I told him that you discovered a song that we did many years ago.
I did. It has nothing to do with not having any new material written. And I had to go scrape through the vaults and see what I have. No, I mean, part of what you do when you're trying to write songs is just you think of everything. You pull out stuff, listen to old stuff. Sometimes you use some of the old stuff and some of your new stuff, or it just kind of sends you in a direction. And I actually ran across something that we had done a long time ago, 10 years ago or something, and thought, oh, wow, this is actually pretty good. I wonder why we didn't do this. So we actually kind of brought it back, and we just did some drums on it yesterday with Brandon, and it was really, really cool, huh? It was really fun.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's like I think you said, the song at that point didn't fit on the album that we were making.
Yeah.
You know, because you kind of pick what is best for the album.
Right, right. It's kind of like that because you don't really know. But you just kind of write what you write, and then at the end of the day, you kind of see what feels like it fits together as an album, right? So sometimes... You have a song, it might be a really good song, but it just doesn't feel like it goes with the other stuff. Like, you know, there's an old song the fans always talk about. It's called Pass Me By, right? And it's like this rumored song. It's Pass Me By. And it is, and it's a really cool song, and I like it a lot. And every time I think about it, I'm like, I don't know if it fits with this. So,
how did they hear about
it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Talk about it.
It exists?
Yeah. We listened to it once.
Yeah?
We listened to it once a couple years ago, and you had some good thoughts on it, and... But we should finish that one.
Yeah, and revisit.
Yeah, yeah.
Bookmark that.
That could be the 10th song. Or
Yeah.
Well, you know what? When we're doing this, when we're talking about something or working on a song, you know, we'll talk about other songs that may have a similar feel or a similar sound, you know, and then we'll start talking about great music that inspired us. We talk about so much stuff from, you know, Rolling Stones, you know, old punk bands, Bowie, we talked about. But we'll go deep, too. Like, you brought up the Summer of Soul yesterday, and I watched it last night with Jackie.
It's amazing,
isn't it? Amazing. Such a good documentary, and so many great, great bands playing. Sly and the Family Stone, I think, probably one of my favorite ones on that.
Cool.
Just great. The Fifth Dimension, too.
Well, but you said 10th song, because I think unofficially we're up to like 9, something like that, so we're very close. But let's talk about this. How many songs do we need to have an album? What's the number? Does it matter anymore?
Well, if it's No Effects, it's like 22.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
but that's, I think even that's Rancid, different, right? Because yeah, those are almost 20. Like they're just kind of. Well, that's kind of the idea. They're supposed to be short snippets, right?
90-second really. Songs or something. Yeah.
Right. Well, the thing about what you talk about, what happens is, Load and Reload, the two Metallica albums, they're coming out, okay? It's whatever, 25th year or whatever it is. And that album, we cut 36 tracks, you know, because the Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 was out. So, well, we should do that too. So we cut 36 fucking tracks. It took us 11 months to get, right?
Wow.
And then James has to write 32 sets of lyrics.
Right.
Can you imagine that?
That's awful.
And so basically, seriously, it's so much fucking work to get 10 great songs. So really, I just said, God, this is a 5-year album if we're going to finish it. So what we did is we stopped and we just we split it into, we went to New York to finish it. To get away and just finish it, and James wrote all the lyrics. Wow. It wouldn't happen if we didn't get away.
Yeah.
At some point, you know, you have this. You know, the thing is with records, what I find is you always have a concept of what you think it's going to be, and it never turns out to be your concept.
Yeah.
It's like we could never do the Black Album again because it's everything lines up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
right.
It's like because
Everything just has to click and fall into place.
Yeah, everything else. It just, you can't repeat it. There's so many classic albums that, you know, I think Springsteen did the best thing after Born in the USA. He did a thing on a cassette deck, right?
Yeah.
Right, because I can't follow that.
Right.
Yeah, so take a break. Anyway.
Well, here's what I'm getting at. Like, I think the number before is it's 12 songs usually. That's what an album used
to
be, right?
Say.
Yeah, about,
cassette. But the thing is now in this age, no one cares about an album anymore, right? You know, you spend 3 years putting together whatever, 12, 15 songs. They listen to one single and go, when's your new album coming out, right? Like it's as soon as an album's out, they want to know when the next album comes out. So the albums themselves are so disposable now.
It's a shame.
It is a shame, right? But it doesn't feel like, why even put in all that to make all these songs that people really, they just don't take it in the same way.
But vinyl, which is albums, is selling a lot.
It's doing better.
It's resurged,
So people like the format of albums. It's disappeared, not because of people not liking them.
Uh-huh.
It's because of the business. Sorry.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, also, I mean, I think you as an artist, I think you've got more to say than two songs.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. So you saying I got to write 12 songs?
No.
You know what?
No, but I'm saying just whatever you want to put out, you know, whatever the band wants. If it's 7, people will like it. If it's 12, they'll like it.
I wonder if you could put this song's done, release it to the internet and then put it all on an LP. And when you have all the songs out, then put it on an LP make physical.
If you do 7 songs, people are going to feel shortchanged. They're going to feel like you can't really say that's an album.
You either got to do a couple of EPs with 4 songs or you know, or an album with, you know, 10 to 12 songs. Right.
I want to hit every time we finish a song, I want to hit send. Yeah. Send it out there, man. Yeah.
I agree. We're hanging out. You played me a couple of songs in your garage. It's fucking awesome, man. I'm like, "Don't God, you? I love I know. This." That's, you know what?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like you can, I'm like, hey, send it to me. I'm not, no thanks. I don't want to be the guy that leaks. No leaks for me.
You know, I don't know if we talked about this before, but we should talk about Fogerty. What he was talking about, what was it, Fortunate Son? He told us the story that what was it? We went to Dexter and Noodles and I and Adam, we all went.
He gave me this shirt.
Yeah. That's Fogerty.
We met John Fogerty.
That's fucking awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah. But he was talking about Fortunate Son, and he said he did Down on the Corner. It was a single, and he just did one take after doing all the backgrounds on Fortunate Son. He did one take on Fortunate Son, and they had to mix it that day. It was mastered on, it was a Sunday. They mastered it on Monday, and it was coming out Wednesday.
Yeah.
And you're going cool.
It was that fast.
Turn around.
Insane.
Yeah.
Crazy. Just insane. I mean, Creedence is really big for both of us, you and me and stuff. So it was really.
It was something our fathers listened to. Yeah. Really. You know, when we were young, you know, we kind of shared that with our fathers.
We had the chance to hang out with him a few months ago. And it was, it was really
cool. Yeah, cool as fuck. Him and his kids and his wife, his two sons that are in a band.
That was awesome.
Yeah. That is real cool.
I mean, they gave me a shirt that was 2XL, but I wasn't offended.
He has his own shirt line, right?
Yeah, what? Fortunate Son.
Fortunate
Son. Actually, and he hugged us all.
Wow. Yeah,
I think, didn't you say we were there? No, you drove 2 hours to get there.
To get a hug from John Fogerty. It was worth it.
It was worth it.
Yeah.
It was like 2 hours.
True.
It was like an hour and a half guy. There, hour 40 there, 2 hours to get home.
Hugs all around.
Yeah. Terrible weather on our way home.
We probably got a photo to prove it, probably. Dig that up.
Yeah.
Now we're making it up. We don't have a title for the new record yet.
Nope.
Do we have a theme?
It's a South American themed record at this point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe. Maybe, right? No, I don't know. I think it's a really weird time, of course. It always feels like it's a weird time, but I swear things are getting weirder and weirder and with everything that's going on, not just politically, but like technologically, right? AI and all
everything.
That stuff.
The whole world has went through this, you know, shattering experience together and then...
Came
out the other end.
Weirder.
Battered.
Battered. Yeah.
Seriously.
Right.
It's rough. Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of interesting things to talk about and how it... You know, at the end of the day, I think it's how it affects the individual, right? Your music is a very personal thing, and I always try to relate the stuff back to how you feel as a person reacting to stuff or listening to the song and stuff. So that's what I'm interested in writing about. But I don't have any actual lyrics. It's just ideas at this point.
You do have some.
See, so, and that goes back to that song. Dexter was feeling it, a little bump in the trunk, right?
That's right.
There it is. See,
I'm feeling, man.
Yeah, you're sitting at the stoplight, the guy pulls up next. You, boom.
Yeah.
Can we stop talking about the song?
Sorry.
Hey, you're the one who circled back, not me.
Yeah, but I couldn't resist. Sorry.
That was good. That was good.
Oh man. So I guess a single comes up before the album, right? So.
Usually, at least one. Yeah.
Are you thinking single this year? That's what we're thinking, right?
Hope so. Yeah. Like I said, man, I want to hit send on a couple of these.
I know.
I really do. I'm always like that, though. You know, I don't. I never have leaked, but I've always wanted
to. The leaker.
Yeah, not the leaker.
When you finish something, you're excited about it. Yeah. You want to get it out there.
10 years, the leaking starts in about another 10 years. No records. I'm just
different kind of leaks.
Depends.
Wow.
Dad joke. Hashtag.
There it is.
The fake laugh.
We all have aging parents.
You told me once, Bob, that you actually got to write with Ronnie Wood, like just hanging out in a something.
It was amazing, and it's just so weird. I just got a call. Do you wanna write songs with Ronnie Wood? And I'm going like, well, yeah.
That's
it. Yeah. So we had a meeting and it was great. He said actually when we were in what's the Pink Hotel on Sunset? The famous one?
Mondrian?
No.
The Chateau Marmont
No, the one in Beverly Hills, the famous one, Hotel California.
Beverly Hotel?
Yeah, Beverly Hills, whatever.
Okay.
So we meet in the Polo Lounge, and Ronnie Wood walks in, and we started talking, and he said, you know more about me than I do, which is, in other words, I'm a huge fan. So it was wow.
Stones and Ronnie Wood and Faces and all that stuff.
Everything,
right?
You know. And so we had a great chat. He came over to Maui, and he got off the plane. And he had just got out of rehab. And when he was on the way to the place where he was renting, he asked the driver to stop at somebody that was taking care of him and said, where can I buy a bottle of vodka? And the person said, didn't you just get out of rehab? And he goes, yeah, but I'm on holiday. great guy.
That's great.
Yes.
Yeah, that's rock and roll.
I love that attitude. It's good fair, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very English.
AI doesn't stop for a bottle of vodka.
That's right.
You know?
Anyway, so he had this house. He went a few days with his girlfriend. Anyway, he had fun. And then I went over and we just fiddled around and we wrote, Eddie Vedder came as a guest.
Oh, wow.
And the three of us hung in this house looking over Paia Bay. And we just had the greatest time, man. Just hanging out, you know, got three songs, recorded a couple of them.
You did?
Yeah.
And who's, did Eddie sing on them?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Ronnie sang. But
nice.
Yeah, we cut it in Los Angeles and it came out. It was big for in England and Europe and stuff like that. But
Brad.
It was just awesome. Great meeting somebody that, you know, not an idol, but just somebody that is a big part of your life.
Well, it's always kind of nervous too, because you meet, you're like, what if this guy's a fucking asshole? Like, yeah. I've loved this person for so long and he's such a fucking dick. And you're like, oh, God, man, I'm so heartbroken.
Yeah.
So
great guy.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is you meet someone like that and you go like, oh yeah, you'll never hear from, but every Christmas he texts and I'm going like, Ronnie just text me. I can't fucking believe it. You know what I mean? Right. It's that thing.
That's amazing.
I'm really lucky that way.
So I got to check that out. I didn't know we had anything solo out. Well, the last thing I have is, Give Me Some Neck, the '80s or whatever. So I got to check that out. And then Slow Horses has, Mick Jagger doing the theme song to that.
Really cool.
It's rad. Yeah.
What's that? A new show?
Cool. Yeah. It's a new show on Apple TV, I think. Slow Horse. It's about like MI5.
Nice.
MI6. See, we're still immersed in music. Music is so important to all of us.
Yeah. That's what
Man.
I was going to say when, you know, I was talking about, we discuss all these different types of music, and all of that comes into play when we're writing, when we're trying to be inspired by something. You never know. You know, it could be the new Green Day record. It could be some 60s soul thing that inspires us, you know, or Metallica or...
Who?
Sex Pistols.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Bob.
Well, it was great. It's like another day. We seem to get together, but it's all great.
Now we're going to go over
to
the control
room. Exactly.
I see how it really
all
is.
The fun starts, all
yeah,
the fun
see,
starts
now
with
now the
this.
Party can start.
Yeah. We're going to go into the next room and continue conversing. This is what we do pretty much every day.
Now Bob's going to start cracking the whip. God damn it. Get some work done.
Yeah. Anyway, it was fun, as always. Yeah.
Thank you.
It was a great time.
Thanks, Bob.
Yep.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Go Kraken.
Yep. Go Canucks.
Yeah.